How effective are virtual schools or blended schools, the ones that provide that combine virtual and traditional face-to-face teaching? This is an important question because enrollment in these virtual and blended schools is going up. The National Education Policy Center is just out with its virtual schools report for 2016, and it has some troubling answers. Gary Moran is co-author of this report. He's a professor of evaluation, measurement, and research at Western Michigan University. Gary, welcome.
Thanks, Cindy.
You studied chartered and district-run virtual schools and blended learning schools. Just to get everybody on the same page, how do those two differ?
Well, the virtual schools are going to be full-time virtual schools. We designate them as whole schools, not programs, so that any results attributable to that school is because of the model. So we're looking at full-time virtual schools that have a unique building ID assigned to them, and they deliver all of their instruction online. And that is different from the blended learning schools, which combine both face-to-face instruction with the online instruction.
What grades? 9 through 12? Or
we're looking at primary and secondary education. Okay. We're not looking at higher ed, so it's from K to 12.
And when we talk about the blended learning, traditionally, is there a general rule of thumb as far as how much is online and how much is face-to-face?
No, and that's a kind of an exciting thing from a research perspective. There's lots of models with blended learning right now, some that are doing half days, some that are doing kids coming in for 2 or 3 days a week, and then 2 or 3 days working from home. The models all vary, and there's just so many different possibilities in terms of blended learning models.
And how much or how quickly are these kinds of schools growing, the virtual school sector?
They're growing quite rapidly. In terms of the school choice opportunities in our nation, they are the fastest growing new avenue for school choice. Their numbers are still small in terms of the whole charter school or even homeschooling movements, but these types of schools are much faster growing right now.
Gary, do we have any idea how many are in Michigan?
In Michigan, in the 2015-16 school year, we had 57 full-time virtual schools and 7 blended learning schools.
And how much are private education management organizations, EMOs, how much are they getting into virtual schools and into the blended schools?
They dominate both sectors. I should say that they dominate not in the terms of the number of schools, but they operate fewer schools, but they're incredibly large schools. So they have the lion's share of all students are attending privately owned and operated virtual schools. And in the blended learning sector, that market share for the private EMOs is growing quite rapidly.
And these are both for-profit and non-profit?
Mostly for-profit companies. And in the virtual school sector, in the blended learning sector, we see one company called Rocketship. They classify themselves as a nonprofit, although many people would question when we look at their management arrangements and the fees and other factors. It's profit-oriented, but it's still classified as a nonprofit.
So I know you wanted to look at performance and get a sense of how good of education are these students getting. And one of those things has to start with student-teacher ratio. What did you find?
We found the data is all over the place. We hear anecdotes. We get contacted by teachers and so forth, and we hear incredible numbers. And journalists across the country are reporting incredible numbers, anywhere from 120 to 200 students per teacher. What we looked at is the data that's officially self-reported by the schools to their state education agencies. And we found typically the teacher-to-student ratio is 2 to 2.5 times what we see in the brick-and-mortar schools.
And then that takes us right into performance. When you look at the virtual and the blended schools and you compare them to brick-and-mortar schools, what did you find?
Just terrible. Even the schools here in Michigan, only 3 of the schools met state expectations. There's 19 that had available data. So 3 of 19 met state standards. In the blended learning schools here in Michigan, none of them met state expectations. So they're not performing well. And Credo, which is a research center out of Stanford, they've done a more rigorous analysis of the online charter schools. And they've confirmed what we've been reporting with the more general school performance measures that across the country, these schools are not delivering a very good product in terms of student learning.
Just so we can understand better, what kinds of measures are you talking about?
What we look at in terms of measures, we're looking at graduation rates. We're looking at the school performance ratings. Every state has a system where they're rating schools based on state assessments and sometimes other measures. In some states, school performance measures are also based on value-added gains. Those measures vary from state to state, but they basically try to get a sense of, you know, what extent the schools are meeting state expectations.
And when you say terrible, what's that mean?
if we look back just a couple of years ago when we were still, most states were still using adequate yearly progress as a measure of meeting or not meeting state expectations, we were finding in the brick and mortar school sector in the country about 52% of the schools were meeting their respective state standards, which is not great. When we looked at the virtual school sector, we were typically finding 27% of the virtual schools were meeting adequate yearly progress.
In graduation rates, what can you tell us about that?
A lot of schools do not have data for that, but of the schools that do, they typically have graduation rates anywhere from 30 to 45%, and that's half the national average.
Wow. Why do you think the outcomes and these on-time graduation rates, this performance, why is this all so much worse for the virtual and blended learning schools than traditional brick and mortar?
Because they are not adequately planned. And it's a great opportunity space. And I can speak for myself and my colleagues at the National Education Policy Center that are also looking at these new forms of schools. We're terribly excited. I mean, this is really exciting. And yet, at the same time, this opportunity space is being defined by these private companies that are the very ones in position to profit from them. So what we really need and what we advocate for is that we ask for a moratorium. We have to figure out what's not working. And right now, stop it. But it's not because we're against this. It's because we need to bring in more audience, more people. We need to bring in researchers, practitioners, and others. That opportunity space, like I mentioned earlier, it's been defined by these for-profit companies that have lobbied effectively in state legislatures, passed the laws that benefit them. We have seen over the last 5 or 6 years now, we're seeing more and more bills being taken up in state legislatures to restrict virtual schools. And almost all of these bills, if they're restrictive in nature, are being stopped because of lobbying and the work in that policy arena. So we really need to take it out of the hands of these private education management organizations and develop this wisely. And I think we do see that virtual schools and virtual instruction is working, and there's more evidence that it's working more effectively at the tertiary level, at the university level. But much more research is needed to know how to make this work for primary and secondary education.
So your recommendations for policymakers and oversight authorities is hit the brakes and let's bring in more outside experts to see why these performance rates and graduation rates are so weak?
Yes. And, you know, in Michigan, we had a pilot study, and I thought that was great. That's how you do education reform. You develop ideas, but before you roll them out, you test them on a small scale. And in 2012, we had a year and a half, almost 2 years of evidence, and none of it was positive. And yet at that time, the legislature and Governor Snyder lifted the cap and ended the pilot study. And now we are second in the nation in terms of the number of virtual schools operating here in Michigan. You know, what happened here was that we had an opportunity to learn from that pilot study. It would have given us the opportunity to study what performance measures are appropriate and what funding mechanisms, how could they be adjusted if we're going to have these for-profit companies owning and operating these schools? How can we get them to operate on a public's best interest? And that was not done. Unfortunately, instead of having research, there's an advocacy group in Midland that organized a couple-day conference. And then Jeb Bush came and visited Governor Snyder and shared a lot of information. But this wasn't research. This is lobbying. And unfortunately, we just never had a research gathering to discuss models and ideas so that we could develop this appropriately.
And ultimately, I can hear from your voice even, your concern is for the kids who are taking these classes.
Cindy, the attrition rates are incredibly high in these schools, incredibly high. And so parents, they are voting with their feet again and again and again. But at the same time, when we look at the amount of money that K-12 incorporated, for example, how much they spend on marketing and where they spend it, they just keep recruiting more and more kids. And that's unfortunate because, I mean, we saw the state auditor in Colorado found 50% of the kids left the virtual schools during the school year, and that means between September and June. You know, many kids leave between school years. K-12 Incorporated itself has reported in its annual report that 2/3 of the students leave within 2 years. So the parents are voting with their feet, the children are leaving en masse, and yet they're being replaced in the overall reform. This model is growing because of the extensive amount of marketing that's being done.
You are not opposed to the idea itself. As you say, it can work well at the college and university level.
That's great. And in fact, I teach one or two online classes every year. Using new technologies is exciting. I think this is going to be the future, especially these blended learning models. This is going to be the future. We will be seeing more and more of this. But the question is, who's going to define that opportunity space? Is this going to be educators and public schools, or is this going to be done by outside groups and special interest?
Gary Moran is a professor at Western Michigan University and co-author of the 2016 Virtual Schools Report, and that is from the National Education Policy Center. And as we say goodbye, what do you want parents to take away from your study, Gary?
Buyers beware, I guess. I think there's a lot of information online. There's more and more teachers that are leaving these schools and speaking out about what's going on there. And I think it's important to look at that. But I also think it's important to encourage our legislators, you know, to stop and rethink, bring in more voices so that we can take advantage of this new opportunity space and not let it be defined by these companies that, you know, have so much to profit. And they are, in fact, profiting very extensively at the public's expense.
Gary, thank you so much for sharing your research with us.
Thank you, Cindy.